Welcome everyone to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Matt Eddy, I am John Manuel. I'm John at John Manuel BA. He's at Matt Eddy BA.
About time.
New Twitter handle for a new season in 2013. Matt Eddy, less gratuitous than Game of Thrones, but more information, packed with more information. And we got big news on the Twitterverse today as we get ready to record this podcast, talking about spring training storylines and from the BA point of view. But Matt, the news breaking as we're recording that Justin Verlander has signed this mega contract that includes $28 million annual salaries, if the early reporting is to be believed, which I have no reason to not believe it. Justin Verlander, a bumper crop of a contract here, to put it in the BA parlance, $28 million a year. Hello, David Price and Clayton Kershaw. They're very interested in this news.
Yeah, it's especially interesting in the backdrop of the Johan Santana news we heard about yesterday.
Right.
The fact that his Mets career is over and his baseball career might be over as well.
A moment of silence for Johan Santana's career.
Talk about
that's it.
Oh,
that's
sorry.
All I got.
No, sorry.
That's okay. That was all I got. I mean, wonderful career and amazing to basically it ended. You know, for all intents and purposes, the night he threw that 134-pitch no-hitter.
Absolutely. Yeah, he was completely ineffective afterward, and he will be this season as well.
And you wonder,
from a pitching
standpoint, the ball that was fair, who hit it? Carlos Beltran?
Beltran.
Hit the ball that should have been ruled fair. It was clearly fair.
Mm-hmm.
Ruled foul. So he winds up, you know, obviously Santana finishes the no-hitter. And then, I mean, I don't know. You're kind of a Mets fan, from you historically, I should say. My roots are. I was a Red Sox fan. Your roots. You were a Mets fan. Was it worth the trade of a first no hitter in franchise history for the injury to Johan Santana?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so. I'm sure Johan Santana thinks no.
No.
Now the Mets have Jonathan Neese as their opening day starter.
Yeah, the question, how much value, I guess Carlos Gomez turned out to be the best player they surrendered to acquire Santana. He's on his second team after the trade.
Yep.
And I think Gomez's value will surpass Santana's, maybe.
I think it
over
might.
Over the course of their, no, Santana was good for 3 years. So.
Carlos Gomez has got a big, nice contract. But Kevin Mulvey, Philip Umber, and Deolis Guerra no longer in this conversation for the Twins, or for anybody else.
Coming to a AAA park near you.
Well, we are going to talk some Twins. We're going to talk about them in the second half of the podcast when we talk about the non-contenders who are relying or bringing up some rookies to start the season. But we wanted to focus on the contending teams first, Matt, because it is a unique combination when you have a contending team that puts rookies in important roles. We've had some teams do that of late. I think the most obvious example, of course, was the Giants and Buster Posey. The biggest anomaly of all these, a rookie catcher hitting four-hole, leading a team to a World Series championship as Buster did in 2010.
And Bumgarner.
And Madison Bumgarner.
As a 20-year-old starter.
Very key starter on that World Series role, and obviously they helped with another one last year. But you know, even last year, the Giants were not nearly as rookie-centric as they had been in 2010. But in 2013, I think some legitimate contenders are really putting a lot of stock in several rookies. The three that jumped out to me were the Atlanta Braves, St. Louis Cardinals, and Texas Rangers. Maybe we'll just go in alphabetical order and start with the Braves, where, first of all, the way they with the trade they made with the Diamondbacks and the other roster moves this offseason, you know, Tommy Hansen being traded to the Angels, a couple other deals, Brandon Beachy's injury. The fifth starter role was right there for Julio Teheran. They traded Delgado to Arizona in that deal. Julio Teheran, who had a terrible 2012 in AAA. I mean, a lot of regression with his numbers, regression with the quality of his stuff. But he fixed it as Ben Ballard wrote a nice winter ball piece this year with Teheran really improving, honing his mechanics a little bit more in winter ball. Got off to a terrible start in winter ball. Then it clicked, and his last three starts in winter ball were tremendous. One ERA in spring training this spring. The craziest stat that jumped out to me, Matt, was 26 spring training innings, seven hits allowed,
yeah,
with 35 strikeouts and 9 walks. And their spring training stats, so obviously caveat emptor a little bit, but what would your take on Teheran's spring and on the importance the Braves seem to be placing in him?
Yeah, the Braves must be thrilled that he sees the job rather than them having to concede and say, oh, we've got nobody better.
Right.
I think that was a big step for the franchise and for Teheran's confidence level. You know, it sounds like he's kind of smoothed out his delivery a little more and gotten, I guess the best way to say it is more conventional.
I think that is.
He doesn't kind of jump at the hitter as much as he used to. That should be good.
I like his. I've always liked his fastball changeup combination.
Yeah, definitely.
It sounds like his breaking ball has gotten better this spring, and it's always been an issue for him. We've talked about that as a profile. That's a tough profile. That right-handed pitcher with a substandard breaking ball. Previously, I think we thought that Teron's fastball was electric enough, and he threw enough quality strikes with it that he could have the two-plus pitches of fastball and changeup, and maybe he wouldn't be an ace, but would be a solid big league starter. Now it sounds like he's made the progress of the breaking ball. Right now he's on a rotation with Hudson Medlin, who had a rough spring, Mike Minor, Paul Mahalam. Tulio Teron has a chance to really be a key factor for Atlanta. I like his chances of having a good rookie season. I'm also higher, I think, than most on Evan Gattis, El Oso Blanco, as his Venezuelan Winter League nickname went, the White Bear.
Mm-hmm.
But Gattis, first of all, I trust Dave O'Brien of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I think he's pretty erudite in these matters. And everything he's seen and talked to people about with Evan Gattis, he was always on board with Evan Gattis. But now, Matt, with Brian McCann starting the year on the disabled list with his shoulder surgery, and who knows how long he's going to be out, feels like Evan Gattis is going to get a lot of chances to catch. You could have another. We mentioned the Giants. Here's another team that could be going deep with a rookie catcher and a rookie battery in some postseason games potentially for Atlanta.
It'd be fascinating to see if he does actually catch Teron and how he works with the veterans, the rest of the veteran staff. But yeah, a guy with obvious power, as we saw all throughout last year, even up to Double A, Winter League, the spring. Incredible story, as you were talking about his Twitter feed the other day.
Right, he has Twitter AVI with a picture of him from when he was working for as a janitor, essentially, cleaning the office buildings at night.
No player may have more humble beginnings than that.
I think the Braves have especially cornered. I mean, let's just look at their team as the mixture of the backgrounds of these guys. Andrelton Simmons was a second rounder out of Oklahoma Junior College, thought to be an overdraft at the time.
Thought to be a pitcher at the time.
That's right. Certainly wrong on both counts. You have your premium guys in Hayward, Upton, both Uptons. 14th overall, first overall, second overall pick. Freddie Freeman was a second round pick. Dan Uglow, Rule 5.
And probably the highest paid Brave.
Yeah, I think he is among position players. And I think Hudson might be the highest paid guy overall. But then you've got Craig Kimbrell from a junior college in Alabama. Mm-hmm. I think he's the big question for Atlanta right now. He was not good for Team USA in the World Baseball Classic, and he's been very iffy this spring. But the humble beginnings, I mean, I don't think it gets a lot more humble than Brandon Beachy and Evan Gattis on this team. The non-drafted free agent, NAIA third baseman, or the 24-year-old when he was drafted, or 23-year-old who'd taken 5 years off and then was drafted out of the University of Texas in the Permian Basin. I mean,
and no organization works the waiver wire like the Braves. Look at this. Projected bullpen. Christian Martinez, Anthony Varvaro, Eric O'Flaherty. Waiver claims.
All waiver claims. And Corey Garrett is a low-slot joker from Mercer, who's been kind of stewing in their system, an up-and-down guy for the last four or five years, it feels like. It is an unusual all-comers for the Braves. They do not discriminate of where you come from. They're looking at what you do. So it's a pretty interesting ball club. And I feel like it's a contending team, but they're in a pretty stout division. And I think one of the reasons, Matt, one of the things that stood out to me in preparing for this podcast was how teams like Washington and Cincinnati that were division winners last year and the Giants, really not a whole lot of room for rookies on these teams, especially Washington and Cincinnati, very set rosters. Really the whole question was how they moved their offseason acquisitions into their lineup, and in Cincinnati's case, what you do with Aroldis Chapman. So I think it's rare that you have a contender like Atlanta that may be fairly reliant on these two rookies, but when you really pull back a little bit, you have a fifth starter and a backup catcher.
Yeah.
So they may not really be relying that heavily on them.
True. I mean, I guess the one question for the Nationals is what happens if Rendon goes out and tears it up at Harrisburg,
right?
And Espinosa continues to not hit as
make
well
contact.
As, yeah.
Could you just make contact? He's a swing and miss machine. What was it, 187 strikeouts last year for Danny Espinosa?
It's problematic.
It was Jose Hernandez-esque.
There you go.
but the St. Louis Cardinals are number one ranked farm system, Matt, another contender year in, year out. The last few years has really done a tremendous job of losing veteran players, plugging in rookies, plugging in the right veterans or the right rookie. And here we're looking at a team that doesn't necessarily have a rookie that you haven't heard of in their projected starting lineup, although I guess Pete Cosma. It's going to be homegrown guys at shortstop, it looks like, with either Ryan Jackson or Pete Cosma as the starting shortstop.
Who would you pick?
Well, I'd kind of go with Mag Matheny. I guess I'd take Pete Cosma, but I wouldn't expect him to hit like he did in the postseason last year. I don't think they expect it. But Ryan Jackson's always been a guy who's been very well regarded for his defense.
I know.
And he's also an unusual guy. First of all, he's unusual, and there are not a lot of American-born shortstops in the big leagues, so that's unusual.
He's the next Brandon Ryan.
He could be the next Brandon Crawford. I don't think he's that good offensively, which is saying something. But he could be that smooth defensive. They were kind of contemporaries in college, and I think the consensus always was that Ryan Jackson was better. Mm-hmm. You know, Ryan Jackson was part of that 2008 University of Miami team. I had to give my Jim Morris. But on that loaded Miami team, Yonder Alonso, Yasmani Grandal, Jamile Weeks, Dennis Rabin, forgotten prospect.
Mariners second rounder.
Mark Sobolewski, Blake Ducote. It was a team that, you know, you were watching them as an amateur scout that year. Amateur scouts would say it's like, you know, you're turning in like a double-A roster. Mm-hmm. You're turning in like 8, 9, 10 guys.
I don't think Rabin's gotten there yet, though.
I don't think a lot of those guys. I think a couple of those guys didn't get the double-A.
You know, I think I would go with
Ryan. Sobolewski might have.
I think I would go with Ryan Jackson and just take the one defender at shortstop in Strat parlance.
That's right.
Bat him eighth. Tell him to just take in front of the pitcher, and you know you might get a salvageable on base percentage.
It sounds like the more you read these things, I don't cover the major leagues, so I'm not expert in these things. But the more you read about, like it's a challenge to hit eighth.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the reasons why Tony La Russa did some of the stuff that he did. But it's a challenge to hit in that eighth spot ahead of that pitcher, where you're going to get pitched around a lot, and you can expand your strike zone. So maybe that plays into why Cosma right now is the starter. Maybe it's a small factor. I think the experience level is probably the biggest thing here. But neither of these guys profile to me, Matt, as an everyday shortstop on a championship team.
No.
So to me, their job is make the routine play as often as possible. But it's pretty odd to see a team with this kind of expectations and this kind of talent level with a middle infield of Ryan Jackson, Peter Cosma, and Daniel Descalso as their middle infielders. Doesn't that strike you as surprising?
Maybe if I hadn't seen the Cardinals last fall, I don't know.
Right.
I mean, this is a team that has really struggled to come up with an impact middle infielder for a while.
And they have Colton Wong probably headed to AAA to start this year. Do you see him being a factor in this roster as the year goes on?
In the second half. You're getting somebody with a lot of experience at second base, but Descalso, I mean, the same thing. I mean, Matt Carpenter is apparently capable at second. You know, I don't know that Wong really fits in. I think Carpenter's a better offensive player.
Right. Right now he is, for sure. I mean, he has much bigger power.
Yeah.
He's obviously playing third base now with David Freese's injury.
Which could turn into a long-term thing, given Freese has a back injury and he's got a long general injury history.
There's a reason why this guy was a 23-year-old fifth-year senior in South Alabama. I mean, this is not new for David Freese. So, and the Cardinals also have their prospect depth really brought to bear here, I think, Matt, with the fact that an arm like Trevor Rosenthal with a minor league starting track record like his can be put into a bullpen where you have Jason Mott starting off the year on the shelf, and they're still going to have incredible bullpen velocity with Mitch Boggs, Trevor Rosenthal back there, and then Shelby Miller in the five-starter role. I mean, Shelby Miller versus Julio Teheran. I mean, been talking about these two guys as the best right-handed starters in the minor leagues for 3 years, it feels like. They've been in the same in that conversation.
Who has the better year?
I think Shelby Miller has the better year. I like Julio Teheran, but I like Shelby Miller's arsenal a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
I think he does have a little bit less, maybe, minor league success compared to Teheran. He never had a year like Teheran had in AAA as a 20-year-old in 2011. Where Julio Teheran, the strikeout numbers weren't huge, but he was so consistent all year against the older hitters. But I still think the best is yet to come for Shelby Miller. I like the breaking ball better. So
definitely, that's the big thing I would mention. In the second half last year, it was like 8-1 strikeout to walk. It was crazy. This is in the Pacific Coast League.
Right.
It was old hitters.
That's right. It was old hitters, hitters ballparks. We could probably talk about your minor league ballparks in here if you want to. But to me, he's also asked to do a little bit less in this rotation where you have Adam Wainwright with his new contract. I expect bounce back from Jaime Garcia. Lance Lynn won, 18 games last year? Jake Westbrook, great veteran, sinker ball type guy. I think Jake Westbrook is actually probably the guy who's most interested in, hey, who's my shortstop?
Yeah,
catch the ball.
Garcia, too, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, Rosenthal in the bullpen, I mean, is there a more anticipated talent in a somewhat less significant role? I mean, that match of his talent and that role is so odd.
Except maybe Aroldis Chapman, but
yeah, yeah.
It's like,
great point. He's as fun to watch as anybody was in the postseason.
Don't expect any negative regression for Rosenthal in that role. Expect him to be as good, not as good, but very, very good in that role.
I completely agree.
As he was
agree.
Last October.
From a fantasy standpoint, I mean, this is a guy who's going to put up. I mean, I guess it depends on what kind of fantasy league you're in. In a conventional league, a middle reliever really doesn't do a ton for you.
Yep.
But if you are if you need a guy who's going to get you low ERA and help your strikeouts, there you go. So,
yep. If you're playing a holds league, this is your guy.
That's right. I think you should have plenty of opportunities. Well, we ranked the Cardinals as our number one farm system, Matt, and we should probably talk about those farm system rankings in a podcast as well. But number three, we had a real tussle at number two and three. We wound up going with Seattle, going for more short-term value with Texas, a organization top 30 that you did, with more of a long-term value, and showing the depth, I guess, of the Rangers farm system. The number 19 and 20 prospects both made the opening day roster in Nick Tepish and Leury Garcia, plus Leonis Martin, not technically a rookie, but beating out an out-of-options Julio Borbón in center field. First off, let's talk about that center field thing, because usually, correct me if I'm wrong, but usually the guy, if it's close in talent, the out-of-options guy usually wins that job, but that didn't happen this year with the Rangers.
Yeah, I think that's because they're not close in talent. I think Martin is a lot better. But you are correct. Usually they give the benefit, you know, because then if the guy plays poorly, you can probably sneak him through waivers and get him back to your AAA team.
Feels like the tools should be comparable, but I think it's the approach, maybe, that's not, even though Borbón walked more than he struck out.
That's fair. You know, Borbón does have a pretty long track record of not producing for Texas, whereas Martin has a short record of not producing.
Right.
But
a decent track record of producing in the upper levels of the minor leagues when he's healthy. So that's
Martin,
my big
yes.
question, is that Martin has not stayed healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess if you're Texas, the best part of this is that you do have a guy in Craig Gentry. You know what you've got there.
Yep.
A guy who can hit left-handers, a guy who can play defense.
Yep.
It won't hurt you. Has found other ways consistently to help a team win when he's not hitting.
Yep.
And that's a very nice fourth outfielder to have. So you can kind of have him job share with Leonis Martin. I think that works for them.
Definitely.
So Martin,
they were lucky to have Craig Gentry on the roster.
Right. And that, I think, helped Leonis Martin make the roster, because they're not going to roll him out there and say, you know what, Leonis, we need you to go out there to have 600 plate appearances and carry the load center field.
Yep.
The expectations could be set low, and if he can rise above them, great. But if he can give them 400 cromulent plate appearances, Craig Gentry could probably take the other 200, 250.
So, oh, yeah, definitely.
So I kind of like that for them. But let's talk about Nick Tepish a little bit. I guess Martin Perez's loss is Nick Tepish's gain. And maybe I'm focusing too much on the negative here, but Martin Perez is now the fractured, a broken bone in his throwing arm.
Mm-hmm.
This guy just seems like, I know he's 20, 21 years old, but I mean, do you feel like it's ever going to happen for Martin Perez? Maybe in a different organization? I feel like there's a little prospect fatigue here, not just with me, but with Texas.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff is major league caliber. You never know if somebody can navigate 30 starts in a season until they do it.
Right.
And you know, his minor league track record does not give you a ton of confidence. His stuff does. You know, the reports, scouting reports, all check out. You know, you never know. You're right, but a change of scenery may be required in some cases. But what's interesting there is the Tepish beat out Justin Grimm for that rotation spot.
Right.
You know, Perez is on the shelf, but Grimm.
Right, he didn't really beat him.
Grimm was on
the
40-man, and Tepish, they moved on to the 40-man to take that rotation spot. So that's a pretty loud endorsement, in my opinion.
I think it is a loud endorsement. And, you know, Tepish was a guy out of high school and a guy who did not have the kind of college career we thought he was going to have. I mean, University of Missouri has, you know, had this nice back-to-back of, you know, the Max Scherzer, Aaron Crow, I'm leaving somebody out, but they had some big leaguers, one after the other, big league pitchers and some big-time pitching prospects, one after the other. There was a stretch there, I believe it was seven years in a row where they made it to NCAA regionals, and the reason was they were built around pitching.
Kyle Gibson, right?
Kyle Gibson's one of the other guys who did not make the opening day roster for the Twins, but I think we expect him to be there, and again, we'll talk about the Twins later. But you know, Justin James was a guy before all these guys who made the big leagues. But really, it was Crow and Scherzer, and then Gibson. But right in this mix was supposed to be Tepish.
Mm-hmm.
It never quite came together for him. Talk a little bit about what can Rangers fans expect from Nick Tepish stuff-wise.
Yeah, I heard good things about him last fall. You know, I think their pitching coordinator really went to bat for Tepish, saying, you know, he doesn't throw 95 like a lot of our guys do, but this guy's going to be a factor for us this year because he can pitch.
And he was right. He kind of had that called. Was there a secondary pitch that stands out for Tepish?
Yes, his changeup came a long way last year. That was kind of the hurdle going into 2012. He's got good breaking ball, good fastball location with sink, and now the changeup is, you know, good enough for him to navigate a lineup a couple times.
And here's the other part of spring training that you have to really trust. I think this is a case of the Rangers really trusting their evaluators,
mm-hmm.
because you take a look at Nick Tepish's spring training line, and it is Arizona. It's Cactus League. But you see a 1.67 whip.
Mm-hmm.
You see a guy did not strike out a guy per inning. You really just can't go by spring training statistics, even when these guys are making making opening day rosters, can you, Matt? I mean,
no, the Arizona League is so funky anyway, just
right.
'Cause the conditions are so different.
All leagues in Arizona, rookie level, fall league, this one.
If you're in the Southwest, it's probably take it with a grain of salt.
I think that's fair, but so I definitely agree with you. I thought Justin Grimm would be the guy who would, if there was a rookie spot to be had and Martin Perez was not available, I would have picked Justin Grimm as that guy. But so far, start of the year, Nick Tepish, kudos to Nick Tepish for making the roster.
Great story.
It is a good story. A 14th round pick. I mean, he didn't let, again, what he did in the past maybe helped make him the pitcher that he is today, but I mean, that doesn't necessarily predict his future. The fact that he struggled for 3 years at the University of Missouri really doesn't mean anything.
I think he turned down big money from the Red Sox out of high school.
He did, out of high school. He did, absolutely. 27th round pick out of high school, turned down above slot money. And then you have Leury Garcia. First of all, we have a nice story, and I actually didn't even get to edit it all. I saw the rough version, but J.J. Mm-hmm. Cooper on Rangers shortstops. But also kind of like he's got a Rangers shortstop piece and then a what makes a shortstop piece. But he was in Rangers camp at the start of spring training to research this story. And Leury Garcia, I guess the way John Daniels put it was, how many guys can play center field, second base, shortstop, and have an 8-arm, 8-speed, and maybe a 8-glove? That's Leury Garcia to them.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a case of trusting your evaluators here.
Yeah, it's hard to come up with a recent comparable of somebody who can handle center field and shortstop.
It's like Mike Martinez of the Phillies, who's a Rule 5 pick, only Leury Garcia is better at all those things,
I mean, his tools, like you mentioned, the areas that he excels, he's explosive. I don't think the Rangers are expecting much offense from him, kind of like Mike Martinez.
Right.
He does switch hit, technically. Doesn't really impact the ball from the left side.
And that's why it feels like, I think you even wrote, you did write in the handbook, hey, look, this is his future role.
Yeah. Versatility is his path to the major leagues.
That's it. Athleticism. And again, a guy who can affect the major league team without hitting. He can help you win games with his base running, with his defense, with his versatility.
It's almost like the perfect bench player now. The team, especially American League teams, don't really pinch hit.
Right.
You're really looking for all those secondary factors. That's what you want in a bench player. It would seem. I mean, the Royals are fixated with Jerod Dyson, for example. Garcia is a much better version of that, in my opinion.
And Garcia has already played this role on a championship team, if I can bring it back to the WBC. Because he was on the roster, but hardly played at all for the Dominican in the World Baseball Classic. But maybe it was a good thing. He didn't play, so he was along for the ride and did not get hurt. Even when Hanley Ramirez, got hurt in the championship game, they went to Miguel Tejada at third base. And Miguel Tejada, if memory serves, it was almost a disastrous defensive miscue that he had. But Puerto Rico didn't have the offense to take advantage of it.
Right.
But I think he made a miscue, a defensive play in that game that was no bueno. And so I almost kind of expected them to go to Leury Garcia in that case. But imagine you're Leury Garcia, and you're saying, hey, you could be our third shortstop behind Reyes, Ibar, maybe our fourth shortstop with Ramirez, and we also have Miguel Tejada. So, like, if you're a shortstop who hasn't contended for an MVP.
Wasn't there a second baseman a no-name guy, too?
Yeah, exactly, that Cano fella. So, I mean, not a lot of areas for him to help. And their outfield, again, if he's going to play outfield here, and they went through two left fielders. They played Ricardo Danita and Moises Sierra, so he didn't get any run over there. So That was a pretty deep team. Pretty fun team to watch.
They should have put him on the mound. Maybe could have given him a couple of starts.
They needed starters. I'm not sure, but he's got explosive arm strength.
That's
so,
right.
But I think he's a fascinating.
At a 5'7 frame, he's a profile starting pitching prospect.
There you go. Well, we need to put him back-to-back with Danny Ray Herrera and Joe Ortiz.
Yeah.
The last 5'7 guys in that organization. They've specialized in those. It's a Baseball America podcast with John and Matt. Matt, the other, I guess, are the Milwaukee Brewers a contender? I'm not sure to call them. I think I would call them a contender. They're in fringe contention.
They're a contender for the wild cards.
I think that's better.
They've got Ryan Braun. They're going to score a million runs. That's the best home run park in the National League.
And they're going pretty heavy on the rookies, it appears to me. I think the one we expected is Willy Peralta. You know, it was in our top 20 rookies after a lot of debate. Actually, no, I think he fell
just
short
outside,
of our top 20
yeah.
rookies. A lot of debate, a heavily debated top 20 rookie. But they also have a guy technically not a rookie, but one of your favorite players in John Segura. And I love the fact that right now with Corey Hart hurt and Matt Gamel hurt, they may have Alex Gonzalez playing some first base for them, or Yunesky Betancourt, or former non-drafted free agent Blake Lally.
Nice.
I mean, this is a pretty random. You talk about, I guess if you're Canadian, you take players wherever you can get them, like Bob Melvin will. But this is a pretty random roster in a lot of ways. And yet I think it's an interesting roster and a contending roster.
Yeah, if any team was positioned to miss Travis Ishikawa, this is the team.
That's right. They actually probably will miss it, Travis Ishikawa. You finally get Tom Hodercourt fave Logan Schaefer on here. But it looks like, it also does look like they're going to have Chris Davis make this roster. And Chris Davis is a fun guy to go through the BA player pages, his old pages, and look him up because I believe it was 2006. He was our top player, high school hitter in the state of Arizona. He entered that year with a lot of helium. Was the rare Cal State Fullerton recruit who was not from Southern California. That didn't usually happen, especially under George Horton. I don't think it happens at all now. But they would not often go outside of Orange County even, or
wow.
San Diego for players. Like Fullerton South, that's pretty much all they had to do. And so he was unusual, and I think they were spending a full scholarship to bring Chris Davis out of Arizona and bring him to Cal State Fullerton. And he never quite produced at Fullerton. He was never, until his junior year, a consistent everyday player. And I guess it's based on his high school hype. He was a little bit of a disappointment. And all he's done as a pro is basically do what Kentrell Davis, who was a high draft pick, a Boris client, $1 million signing bonus guy out of Tennessee, he's done all the things that Kentrell Davis was supposed to do, and right now it looks like he's going to try to overcome the right corner profile when you're 5'10" and don't play center field, man. I mean,
and don't have like, you know, 70 power.
Right, but he does have power.
He does.
He's got big power. There's not really a spot for him on this team because you know it's not like they're going to move Ryan Braun to first base. But this team is a. There's some mismatched pieces here, but I'm fascinated to watch how. I guess I'm more interested in the Brewers than I should be.
Yeah, when you mention Chris Davis, I immediately think of the Orioles' Chris Davis,
right.
the big left-handed donkey.
Right,
but
right.
In this case, we're talking about Chris Davis with a K.
A K-H.
K-H.
Which is very unusual. The K-H-R-I-S first name, and I believe it's technically it's Christopher.
What was your question?
It's unusual. My question is, am I too fascinated with the Brewers? They're probably not as interesting as I think they are, right?
I think the most interesting thing was that Melvin's Canadian, and so are Axford and Jim Henderson.
That's right.
That's interesting.
That's right. They do like their Canadians over there. And then, of course, they signed Kyle Loesch. I guess the other thing that they think they're a contender.
Right.
If you don't think you're a contender, you do not give up your mid-first-round pick, that bonus pool money, and
yeah.
and go out just for Kyle Loesch.
I mean, you have Ryan Braun in his prime. I mean,
go for it.
You pretty much have to be a contender.
Go for it. And I like their chances. I think they are a wild card contender. And Davis, getting back to him to finish this thought, it is Arizona, but he hit 6 home runs in spring training. I mean, I know that's not Michael Morse with his 9 home runs, but he did hit 6 home runs in spring training, and that seems to have been what put him on this team. So
it's safe to say he surpassed Caleb Gindel on the depth chart.
I think that's safe to say, and we did just get another Caleb Gindel org report where Caleb Gindel said, I've had bad starts before, but last year was 3 months. So, yeah, that's
how
a bad
start. How about if Hunter Morris goes out and hits well for Nashville for a month? Is he in the picture at first base?
I don't see how he's not. You know, I don't see how he's not. Can you really contend with Alex Gonzalez and maybe Yunesky Betancourt and Blake Lally?
I don't know the answer, but I would like to find out.
I think we're going to find out. And the best part about it is that at Tom Hodercourt, our longtime Brewers correspondent, does a lot of great stuff for us with the Almanac. Tom's sardonic wit will be put to the test by this Brewers team, I believe, because Tom can make fun of anything, and I, for one, enjoy it when he makes fun of the Brewers or Unesky Betancourt or this kind of thing, because he's not a snark guy.
Right.
He's an old-style sarcasm and just it's a jock kind of guy, not a snark kind of thing. And I tend to prefer what the way Tom does it. So
gotta love Tom.
Yeah, I think the jock personality plus the Virginia education equals funny for me. Now in the American League, outside of the Rangers, Matt, I didn't really see a contending team that was relying that much on rookies. The most interesting story to me, maybe in this because it was just me, was the Jackie Bradley phenomenon with the Red Sox. Is that a good place for you to start with the American League?
Yeah, I was the high man on Bradley.
You were.
In our rookie meetings, I thought he had a strong case to be at the back of that list. He just got squeezed out. I think, you know, just with the potential injury or trade of Ellsbury, I think he was positioned to play this year. And now he's put himself in the discussion with his play in Florida. But here's a guy with a .370 on base percentage last year in Double A.
Right.
You know, in his first year of professional ball. But what really sealed the deal for me was his manager last year with Portland said this is a guy who's he's not afraid of the big stage.
Was that John Bowles? Not John
Kevin
Bowles.
Kevin Bowles. Kevin Bowles, yeah.
I mean, and you mentioned that to me off.
Because his tools and skills are apparent, but when you have that kind of that X factor in makeup, I think that makes a big difference, for rookies in particular.
And I always made the comp to him out of college as a Mark Kotze-type player.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Kotze, who played center field but wasn't a burner. Wasn't a profile center fielder in terms of his tools, but played center field because of his instincts and feel for the game and reads. And you read all those same kind of things in spring training. And then again, Mark Kotze makeup, leadership, toughness, grinder mentality. Jackie Bradley has all those things. Then you throw in the fact that I think Jackie Bradley has more offensive upside than Mark Kotze had. And I know Jim Callis would not ever want to hear that because Mark Kotze is his all-time favorite college baseball player. And he would be yours, too, if you covered the 1995 Titans. I did not. That team went 57-9, and Mark Kotze hit 20-something home runs at like .450 and was their closer.
The all-Titans episode.
But Jackie Bradley, well, I love the Titans. But Jackie Bradley was those same kind of things without the closer at South Carolina. And if you follow college baseball at all, don't forget Jackie Bradley's 2011 year, his draft year, when he came back early from the broken hand. And his first game didn't have great swings, but his second game back in the College World Series just jumped right back into it with line drives. I mean, that's one of the things that South Carolina specialized in their three-year run in Omaha with two titles and a second place. Christian Walker did the same thing now in the Orioles system, and I happen to like Christian Walker more than most prospect guys do because no situation fazed him. Jackie Bradley is very similar to that. And the defense, the way you read the same reports about him defensively now in pro ball, in the big league spring training and in Double A, it's what every scout saw in him as an amateur. It's kind of an Albert Almora read for to a Cubs prospect who, again, is a center fielder without burning speed, without an 8-run tool. This guy just gets to everything. He reads balls off bats as if he were an infielder. And that's Jackie Bradley, and he's a very unique player who I think has good tools, but just off-the-charts feel and makeup that's going to make him a really good player.
Yes, absolutely. The Kotze comp makes sense. I don't think he's going to hit, like, 15 home runs. Probably Kotze topped out probably near 15.
It feels like that's where Mark Kotze's ceiling was.
But you're going to get a lot of value with base running and on-base percentage.
I think so. And, you know, if you're the Red Sox, it's a great player to come up with. It's a great prospect to come up with as Jacoby Ellsbury is heading to free agency. And he's a very tough guy to get a read on because his 2011 peak is so much bigger than his other seasons, and he's had a consistent inability to stay healthy over the course of 162 games, and he's a Scott Boras client. I mean, that all adds up to a very tough price tag, and if the Dodgers didn't have a million outfielders, you'd say he's going to the Dodgers, you know?
They can play Double A with Puig. They can.
That would be fascinating. That's the other big spring training story, Matt. We probably should talk about Yasiel Puig. Because he's a fascinating guy, and really, I mean, when's the last time you had a guy get spring training comparisons to Bo Jackson? Physical comps to Bo Jackson. That doesn't happen very often, and it wasn't because he was limping with a bad hip. Or I don't think his archery skills were on display for everybody, but did you get a chance to see him at all this spring? I only saw him one time on TV.
I did not.
Do you have a take on Yasiel Puig? I mean, what would you do with a Dodger with a guy who tore the cover off the ball like that? Still seems a little raw. And then really doesn't have a place to play in the big leagues right now.
Yeah, no kidding. And that outfield.
The contracts in that outfield.
I don't really have a take because they signed him in the context of having a set, established, expensive outfield.
I think the real
do they want to put him at first base?
I don't believe so. I think that what it looks like is, especially with Adrian Gonzalez, maybe when they signed him. But it sure seems, it feels like, first of all, they wanted Adrian Gonzalez, I think, in that Boston trade last year, and they wanted Josh Beckett, and they had to take Carl Crawford as part of the deal. So they decided to swallow it because money is no object to these Dodgers, who also have a $100 million renovation of Dodger Stadium that's finishing probably... their game, I guess their first exhibition game starts at 7:05. They're finishing that renovation about 7:04. So the Dodgers are just pouring money into this team, the Guggenheim partners and Irvin Magic Johnson, all this. So last year, but before that, when Frank McCourt was under the team, I think just in an effort to look relevant, they gave Andre Ethier this 5-year, what was it, 5 years, $80 million extension. And Andre Ethier is a good player. I'm not trying to bag on him at all. I don't think he's a 5-year, $80 million player. And so now I would say he's the odd man out because you already have lefty bats in Crawford, who's on an unmovable contract because he already got moved to the one team that will take him. And you have Adrian Gonzalez at first, kind of parked there. So I'm not sure what they could do with Ethier in terms of moving him. And then on top of that, you have Puig, who they signed. So the McCourts gave Ethier the too big of a contract, like to prove to people that they were – hey, we have money, and we're going to spend it and sell tickets.
I think that's a fair read.
I think that's what happened. And then this is not an original read. Then they had Puig last year where they had money. They wanted to do what it took to sign Puig. And I think Ben Badler's criticisms of the Puig signing were fair from the standpoint of he was not a consensus big money guy. When you're comparing him to, say, a Jorge Soler, who was younger, $30 million for Soler, 42 for Puig. He got more than Soler. He's older, so there's more known, but also maybe a little bit less upside. You know,
and a better name.
Right, he does have an interesting name, Generation Y, Cuba guy. But on top of that, I think Ben's real criticism was that no scout that he talked to thought it was possible the Dodgers had that good of a read on Puig.
Right.
They'd seen him enough to spend that much money on him. Not that he couldn't be good, but just that it was very unusual, and these scouts thought questionable to give him that much money on such a short look because of how his scouting process went, and Ben detailed it in Mexico, how there were workouts that got scheduled and then got canceled and this kind of thing. It was kind of a circus atmosphere around signing him. But that all goes in the past with the fact that this guy's showing big-time tools, a laser arm, huge power. It really sounds like it's just a matter of how much he can polish up his approach, and he sounds like he has a potential to be a Yoenis Cespedes.
Yeah, so. I mean, we should make a bet as to which day he'll take his first walk.
That hasn't happened yet in spring training, has it? I don't have a cough button here, so I'm sorry about that. But yeah, to me, he is one of the most fascinating stories of spring training, and I don't know who the Dodgers would trade Andre Ethier to.
The Yankees already got their corner outfield fix, right?
That's it, I guess so. That would have seemed to be the
That's
team.
That's a perfect situation for Ethier.
And it is a great situation for
and
a
maybe
left-handed
bat. A couple years ago they would have done it, but the money now it just doesn't work for them.
I mean, when Curtis Granderson comes back, it's Granderson, Gardner, and Ichiro, but you still have one power bat in that outfield, and Brett Gardner hasn't stayed healthy. I mean, he obviously missed all of last year. Ichiro is 40, if memory serves. And Travis Hafner, your DH, is not a sure thing. Some of the Yankees have a DH who's set, although I suppose they're going to use Derek Jeter there quite a bit this year, probably more than Derek Jeter would want to admit. I mean, that just seems like it's too much of a fit. But even so, we have the National High School Invitational going on here in our backyard, Matt. And I was talking to a couple of agents over there yesterday and the days before. And the Yankees, they aren't spending. They're not going to – I mean, the fact that they spent for Vernon Wells, I think that's actually probably something we should talk a little bit more about. Is that the most shocking thing of the spring training, that the Yankees went out and spent for Vernon Wells? I know it's only $10 million, but $10 million for Vernon Wells.
It's shocking, yeah, that he's $10 million better than Matt Diaz and Juan Rivera. That's
right.
Probably the most shocking thing.
That is crazy.
Because they could have those guys for the minimum, but they said, no, we want to pay $13 million total for Vernon Wells.
I think so. and give up a guy. And I don't think they gave up much in terms of prospects.
No,
Kramer Snead probably moves into your top 15 for the Angels. Didn't make the depth chart for the Yankees. But it is just shocking to me that the way the Yankees have allocated their resources. Ben Badler not here to defend Brian Cashman, as is his usual wont. But, I mean, doesn't it surprise you a little bit that they are willing to spend on Wells over those type of guys and then weren't willing to spend in the offseason on Russell Martin?
I think the Granderson injury just – well, the Granderson and Teixeira had this compound effect of just scaring the crap out of them. Like, we have no power sources.
Right.
You know, and A-Rod and Jeter, we just need somebody who can hit a home run
from the right
once every 10, 15 days.
I mean, and then the other thing is, if they have success this year, if they're a good big league team, I think a lot of that's going to go to a lot of that credit's going to go to your WBC MVP Robbie Cano, and he's an impending free agent. And the Yankees are trying to stay away from that $187 million luxury tax. It's going to be a lot harder to avoid that with Robinson Cano as a free agent, getting a lot more expensive, and he's far and away their best player, outside of CC Sabathia, maybe, I mean, arguably. So what's your take on the Yankees, just briefly? I mean, do you see this as a playoff team? I mean, Teixeira and Granderson aren't out forever. They're just out until May.
Yeah, the pitching and defense components of the Yankees could actually be above average.
Especially the starting pitching.
That could keep them in contention for the first half.
And it's really fascinating that they're getting Mariano Rivera back.
Yeah.
What Rivera are we going to see?
Because, I guess Nunez will be the shortstop to start. And then Jason Nix plays third. Who plays third? Euculus, Nix.
I mean, I'm surprised they don't have Euculus at first base. Right now, you're talking about Lyle Overbay getting first base. Don't forget Frank Cervelli and Chris Stewart. I know you love Chris Stewart.
I love Chris Stewart.
Cervelli and Stewart are your catchers. Neither of these guys have ever been everyday guys. And your 4-5 spots in the rotation right now are Nova and Phelps.
Yeah.
Nova had one. Yeah, I said he's had two very interesting major league seasons where he won 18 games but wasn't really that good, and then the second season where he had a terrible ERA, but he was probably better than his components were probably better than his actual ERA and his win-loss record. So
yeah,
those guys are fascinating. The Yankees. This is one of the more interesting Yankee teams. I'm fascinated to see what Eduardo Nunez does in an everyday role.
I think they will be in contention through the wild card, through the trade period.
I think so.
For a wild card spot.
I think the biggest test will be, can Joe Girardi and their starting pitching, can Girardi mix and match, and can their starting pitching kind of keep them in contention until Teixeira and Granderson come back? Because when they get those two guys back, and presumably by that time, Jeter at something close to what his full speed is as a 37-year-old shortstop recovering from a major ankle injury, then we'll see. And I guess he's actually 39.
I think he turns 39 this season. During the season.
Wow. I'll tell you, he just looks so different in the face to me now than he used to. His face is a lot rounder.
I was going to say, their defensive component is so much better because they have a different shortstop, but it's Nunez, who is anything but consistent
he's
defensively.
He's an air machine.
Yeah, and that's not what you want from a shortstop, in case you didn't realize that.
No, he's one of those guys who just plays so fast. It doesn't make I was about to make a bad college basketball analogy. I will not make it.
Well, there is one other team in the American League, I think,
okay,
that will have rookie impact, and that's the Rays.
Oh, absolutely.
Tampa Bay. I mean, they're going to turn over right field, perhaps.
Presumably.
And perhaps a rotation spot to impact rookies. Two guys who were in our top 20 preseason list. Will Myers, no introduction necessary.
Right.
And Chris Archer.
Will Myers.
Triple-A top prospect last year.
I mean, to me, it just feels like, come May, Will Myers is your right fielder. James Loney gets released. Ben Zobrist becomes the most versatile first baseman in the game. And that's how the Rays move on there. I'm stunned by today's news that the Rays have decided to, and we're recording this on Friday the 29th, that Roberto Hernandez, nay Fausto Carmona, beat out Jeff Niemann for that starting rotation spot. And Jeff Niemann, with the very difficult to repeat arm action, goes to the bullpen. Just Jeff Niemann does not get hot very fast.
No,
so
that was always a criticism of him, even when he was a Triple A prospect.
Right, yeah, it's been a consistent criticism. And he's in better shape now than he probably ever was. Again, I've said this before on podcast, but last year when he was in Triple A, he didn't even look like the same guy. He was much trimmer than I'd ever seen him in previous iterations, both in college and in Triple A and the big leagues. And so I think and it's not like he had a good spring. He just got beat out by the former Fausto Carmona. And Roberto Hernandez is a ground ball guy, and this is a team that really accentuates its infield defense. They've got Junel Escobar now. The Rays could go a million different ways, is what, I guess, is what I'm saying, Matt.
Yeah, and what would – I mean, you're thinking here, you're moving Niemann to the bullpen. Are you hoping that some team is really desperate for a starter? Because, obviously, Niemann can't go to AAA. He's out of options. He might even have more than 5 years of service.
Yeah, I think he's close to that.
So if you're hoping that another team wants a starting pitcher, are you not? Would that be your thinking in this situation? Or
it would be for me because, you know, you also have Jake Odorizzi and Chris Archer, and I'm leaving out somebody.
Mike Montgomery,
and Mike Montgomery is another one. Alex Torres. You have so many options at AAA as well. Their pitching depth in the system. And Colomé, who's the left-hander who throws really hard?
Any Romero
is coming up.
He'll be in Double A this year.
Yeah,
I think he finished last year in High A.
Right. So I mean, they really do have a lot of options. And again, Niemann threw well this spring. So only 4 walks in 24 innings. I'm not sure. I guess this is the best they can do in terms of and to their credit, they're not going to go with some kind of tandem starters in the big leagues. You know, they're going to go ahead and give their five, who they felt their five best starters were, the ball every 5 days, and that next guy goes to the bullpen.
So, never heard of any of these guys, though.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the other possibility I think to consider here, Matt, is what if the team gets off to a bad start, then what do they do with David Price? If they get off to a bad start, do they trade David Price before they lose him for nothing? What is he at, 2 years before he's a free agent? I mean, do you move? Are you proactive on David Price? I mean, you just don't know. So many things, so many parts of our conventional wisdom with other major league teams don't apply to Tampa because of their financial situation and because of how creative they are as a franchise.
Yeah, they have Price locked in for next season, I believe.
I think so.
So yeah. I think this offseason or next season will be, I know it's kind of a rhetorical question, but
right.
I think the fact that they have him locked up for salary next year makes a big difference.
And the Verlander contract certainly does not enthuse any Rays fan. Most people in the industry don't already think that he's gone. Whenever he's a free agent, that he's gone. So now that's even more likely that he's not a Rays for life. You know, don't get that Rays for life tattoo anywhere, Dave. I don't think that's going to happen. I think he knows that. I think his dog Astro knows that, and all his Twitter followers know that. I'll throw out a couple other rookies who intrigued me, Matt, as we talk about spring training storylines, and we'll wrap up this podcast. I do think it's fascinating that Brandon Maurer is making the Mariners out of spring training. Again, this is one of the reasons why, and I think it's, you know, it's 6-1 and half dozen the other. But we definitely thought that the Mariners had a possibility of more impact potential in their top 10,
yep,
as close to the majors compared to Texas, which is why, at least that's why I had, I think, Seattle ahead of Texas in my farm system rankings.
That's fair.
Definitely a dime's worth of difference between those two. And that's really more of a, I was more pessimistic about Martin Perez and Leonis Martin than maybe some other people would have been.
Right.
Because also, we didn't even talk about Jerickson Profar, who didn't make the opening day roster. Michael didn't make the opening day roster for Texas, or not looking like they're going to make the opening day roster.
Profar was optioned.
He was optioned. Right, both those guys have already been optioned. So, Just to me, Maurer was one of those reasons for Seattle. They had such depth of pitching.
Mm-hmm.
But is it a little bit surprising to you that he beats a Holtzman or a Paxton or some of the other guys
Holtzman,
with more
yes.
hype that he got
yeah.
to the big leagues?
Holtzman, yes. And I don't know. He's on the 40-man. Are those other guys? Walker's not.
I don't believe any of the
Holtzman's
other guys
not.
Are that. Yeah.
I think, you know, that might have been the biggest factor. Maybe he's just a placeholder in essence. You know,
right.
Like, here's a guy who we feel it's going to get beat up, so he won't lose all his confidence, you know, pitching in the big leagues.
Yeah, and I mean, and again, that's another team where you kind of almost don't know what that ballpark is going to play like this year.
Because it's probably easier to sneak guys through waivers during the season than it is right now.
Right. That's a good point. I think it is, because everyone's got their antenna up right now.
Yeah.
Is Seattle a contender in your mind? They're not for me.
It would be tough. Well, one of the things that would have to go right, you know, Smoke would have to become
right.
an impact player, middle
right.
of the order hitter.
And that hasn't happened yet in his major league career.
Well, tell me why they're not.
Well, that's a better question. I think why they're not is that I just don't trust their lineup yet, even though it did get better with Mike Morse and Kendrys Morales. But what I think this is just a team that's kind of caught in between.
Mm-hmm.
I think they went way too all in for defense before, and now they seem like they're all in for offense. And they're volume of DHs just seems like their DH replacement ratio seems too high. But I We did have. We should probably take a couple of these Twitter questions because you mentioned Justin Smoke, and this is a good transition as any to take these questions that we asked for on the podcast on Twitter. But Matt Winkleman asked, like, you know, discuss the reemergence of top prospects such as Justin Smoke and Dominic Brown. I think you and I both believe more in Dom Brown than Justin Smoke. So I guess I would say Smoke is one of the issues. I would love to see the Mariners be a contender just because that would mean Smoke, Montero, Ackley,
mm-hmm.
two of those three guys would have come through and been average or above average big league hitters to go with the rest of their pieces. And I think if they're a contender, then that means Brandon Maurer and Blake Bevan were being solid average or, you know, decent big league starters. That's a lot of ifs. I just don't like the look even of Bevan being in their rotation. I think that's a reason why they're not a contender right there. Are you Bevan guy?
He's a rich man's Chris Volstad.
I
love him.
He's a big man's Chris Volstad. He's a bigger Chris Volstad, and Chris Volstad's big.
6'7", yeah.
So
Bevan's 6'9"?
I think he's 6'8", 6'9", and you know, everything has to sync. But I'm fascinated by how this park will play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
will a right-hander hit a home run this year, for example?
They're certainly banking on it with Morse and Montero. But you talk about kind of culture shock going from hitting in spring training in the Cactus League to hitting in Safeco. Those are two extremely different environments. So.
It's like jumping from the Midwest League to the Cal League.
It is kind of like jumping from the Midwest
League. But in reverse.
That's right. It's being sent down from the Cal League to the Midwest League.
But to answer the question about Dom Brown versus Smoke,
yes.
You know, I think we understand that tall pitchers need time to work through their pitching mechanics.
Yeah.
I think the same is true of hitters. And Dom Brown is a tall hitter.
It's
funny to see him and Ben Revere in the same Phillies outfield when they, you know, they're both competing for a fly ball. It's like,
well, if I were Dom Brown, I'd get out of Ben Revere's way because he's probably better at it. And then Ben Revere could give it to Dom Brown to throw it in.
There you go.
But yeah.
I think that same thing applies to hitting prospects. We're seeing that with Dom Brown now in try number three as a major leaguer. Brandon Belt.
Right.
6'5 hitter who, you know, gets tied up inside. But
we saw it with Jason Hayward, his sophomore year, basically his second year in the big leagues where he really had struggled making adjustments.
Major league pitchers and catchers know where to pitch these guys inside.
And they know more now than they probably ever knew because of the video and the advanced scouting that we have now. You know, Smoke, 217 last year. He's a career 223 hitter. It's a career 683 ops. You know, again, I don't know what to make of spring training numbers. All I know is I really thought that guy was going to hit as a college player and in the minor leagues. I didn't know if I thought he'd be a star. I always thought Pedro Alvarez had more impact potential, more power than Justin Smoke.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely expected more than 217 out of Justin Smoke. So.
The breakout will be for real for Smoke if he hits from the left side of the plate, which he has not done as a professional, really.
That's been the key.
For any extended stretch, so.
And so he compounds his difficulty with throwing in switch hitting. So he really, you're talking about twice as much BP, basically. I always thought Dustin Ackley would hit a lot better than Dustin Ackley has hit as a pro. I definitely thought the same thing for Justin Smoke. But I'm actually been more disappointed in Ackley because I held him up to a higher standard than to Justin Smoke. So that's a great comment. Are there other guys in that Justin Smoke, Dom Brown range? I threw out Lonnie Chisenhall as another possibility in here. Guy who's not a rookie, hasn't quite established himself, feels like. Now the Indians aren't relying on him anymore. Michael Bourne comes in, Nick Swisher comes in. They've added some veteran ballast to this team. They feel like they're one of the more interesting clubs to me. I'd be a lot more interested
too.
In them if not for their starting pitching.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing because they got some very stable assets in Bourne and Swisher. I mean, you know what you're going to get. They're not all-stars, but you know what you're getting.
Reliable players.
The Indians need. But the rotation, unless Trevor Bauer is a Cy Young Award contender.
And he's already been optioned out as well. So.
Yeah, I mean, Zach McAllister could be okay as he comes back, but what's the upside there?
Rolling the dice on Ubaldo Jimenez, which I mean that in the literal sense of the word because of the dice rolling arm action. Japers, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I would caution people about reading too much into Chisenhall's AAA numbers.
Okay.
Because Columbus is the most extreme hitter's park in the International League, which I didn't realize either. Until this Park Factors thing a couple weeks ago.
I missed that in your Park Factors.
That's an extreme home run and runs overall park in AAA, in the International League, I should say. The only one that actually favors hitters to any great degree.
In the entire International League?
In the IL, it's the one.
Not even Durham?
It does, but not anywhere near Columbus levels.
That's fascinating, and apparently they think it's going to change at Durham with the new building they built beyond the left field line. So I'm sorry, I didn't read this in depth enough. I just kind of glazed over the International League part of it. But did Columbus change when they made renovations of the ballpark, or is it that a lot of hits went out of the rest of the league?
No, it's Huntington Field, the new park they opened in 09,
okay.
is dramatically different. It's because of the city, the lot they're on in Columbus, there's just less real estate to use, and they have practically no foul territory. So there's hardly any foul outs there. So
that's fascinating. I did not know that. Japers asked about two players we already talked about. Whose story performance were you more impressed by this spring, Brandon Maurer or Jackie Bradley Jr.? I guess we were probably both going to answer Bradley on that. I think Bradley was a little bit bigger surprise to me, I guess.
Okay.
Well, just for me, especially when you compare the fact that Blake Bevin is in this big league rotation, how low is the bar set to make this big league rotation? I hope Blake Bevin's family's not listening.
We should mention that the prize of the Montero trade, or the Pineda trade, Noesi, was sent out very, very early in spring training.
I was a Hector, and how did he get a fourth option?
Because he didn't spend much time in full season ball.
That's right.
Until he became
he had Tommy
kind of
John,
guy.
And he was so he's a little bit older. But I was always a Hector Noesi guy. Not always, but later as he emerged, I was a Hector Noesi guy.
Pretty much as soon as minor league camp opened, whoop. See you later.
He is
Hector.
He's not rewarded my faith, and he was brutal last year
with
a capital B. So. I think Japers, both of us think the bar. Not that the Red Sox have great outfielders either. But Ryan Sweeney's been a good fourth outfielder. Daniel Nava, we know what he can do. J.J. Cooper, fave. But Jackie Bradley making
Johnny
that
Jones.
Roster. If he's making that, that's right. If Jackie Bradley is really making that roster, I think that's a bigger surprise. Because it doesn't seem like the Red Sox really have any reason to rush him.
And the Red Sox, given their salary commitments, have designs on contending.
Correct.
I think that's fair to say.
Right. I think that's a great point. And then Doug Plord asks, how many stars for Vegas for Wheeler, and I think he meant starts at Vegas for
he's a five-star pitcher.
That's right. Supposing good health and all, does the Santana news change the timeline there, Matt? I don't think it does. Do you?
No, I think they have enough fifth starters to get through. It's an interesting situation because if Markham and Santana are unable to give, we know Santana's going to give them nothing, but if Markham gives them nothing, Things are going to get ugly in a hurry there because it's John Neese, established major league starter. He's good. He's quality.
Yep.
It's Matt Harvey, who's probably going to hit a wall in the second half. It's Dylan Gee coming back from shoulder surgery.
Yes.
It's Jeremy Hefner.
Jeremy Hefner is listed right now on their MLB depth chart as their fourth on that.
I know Aaron
Laffey is
in the picture, right? Who's
I think Aaron Laffey is in the picture. How about Henry Mejia?
Who's fifth on the rotation, projected rotation?
Well, I think Henry Mejia is right now.
No, well, I think Laffey, they're going to have to add him to the 40-man. I think Laffey Taffy is the way they're looking.
That is amazing. That's really there's just not a lot of options. So I think it's actually a really fair question that this when you just pull back and look at the whole situation, it really could speed up the timetable for Zach Wheeler. And I guess that the whole thing is how much will do the Mets have as an organization to keep him there? Well, I mean, first off, you're in a battery with Travis d'Arnaud, who is going to be the mayor of Las Vegas. He's in Las Vegas for a second straight year. Worst places, I guess, in the minor leagues to play 2 years in a row if you're a player than Las Vegas,
but
especially if you're a hitter.
That's a good point. I mean, it's a good experience, those two working together. Maybe they come up in tandem. I think what the biggest key would just be managing Wheeler's workload so that he doesn't go too far beyond 180 innings or so. I think that's really what the Mets' goal is.
Right.
It should be their goal. I mean, what are they playing for? Fourth place?
I'm just looking at other possible starters. I mean, in their 40-man roster, there just aren't a whole lot of names there.
Aaron Laffey and Carlos Torres would be their big minor league imports who could make some starts for them.
Yeah, I mean,
both would have to be added to the 40-man.
Maybe, when you're talking about their, Corey Mazzoni, would they skip Corey Mazzoni up there just to try to give Wheeler more development time? They value Mazzoni, do they not?
They do. I don't know that they're sold on him being an impact starter, but
it's pretty ugly. In other words,
yeah. Not, oh, the pitching in the second half is going to be it's going to be brutal.
And that was, I think, a question you wanted to throw out there as a kind of a final question. Who's the team? Well, Frey, how did you phrase it? Team that could lose 100 games?
What would be the team that's not generally considered a last place team, but could really bottom out and be worse than we think?
Well, I guess. I do think that the White Sox, I think the American League Central is very volatile. I think all the teams in the American League Central are volatile. I think things could go wrong in Detroit, and they could still win the division, but their bullpen's very unsettled.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Rondon, a rookie storyline we were watching, that he did not make the big league team. I think everyone expects, I mentioned we were going to talk about the Twins earlier, I think everyone expects the Twins to be bad. I think they could be epically bad. I think they could be just as bad because their pitching staff looks so ugly. They could be just as bad wins-loss-wise as the Astros. Maybe not that bad. But I am fascinated to watch the Aaron Hicks career, and we'll see if he can make that same kind of jump that Denard Span made, although Span made it from AAA. But Hicks really didn't perform for the better part of 2 years, then had a solid but not spectacular AA. I mean, he did the Eastern League last year. People liked him but didn't love him, right?
Correct.
I mean, that's fair. But he had a great spring training. He had a 3-home-run game.
Nice.
Definitely seems to have improved his – and this was, again, in the Grapefruit League, not the Cactus League.
That's impressive, yeah.
So he seems to have improved his swing from the left side, and I think he's going to be a guy who can help you without hitting because he will draw walks. I think he will
mm-hmm.
steal some bases, although he's never been a great, efficient base stealer. I think he'll be a good defender. So he should accumulate the big league experience to become a good offensive player eventually because the tools are there. I don't expect him to be a good offensive player in 2013, though.
No.
And
no.
I expect that team to be pretty ugly in Minnesota.
You mentioned the White Sox at first. What was
the
reason for that?
Well, the good guys, they lost A.J., and they're replacing him with Tyler Flowers. And A.J. was not just a good leader of a pitching staff. It was a veteran pitching staff and knew how to handle it, and a lot of the same guys that he'd handled, but also a guy who hit 27 home runs last year. And even if he didn't have that in prior years, he was still a plus offensively behind the plate. So
yep.
I think that's a huge loss for a team whose margin for error isn't that
big.
That's
a huge downgrade.
It's a huge downgrade. The chances of Jake Peavy, you know, doing what he did last year.
Banks
again,
is already injured. Floyd has got injured for the first time last year.
And that's,
this is,
I think they have a disaster potential there.
Yeah.
So I love what they did last year. I think they got a lot of credit for their farm system last year, and you know they did get production from rookies, but it wasn't necessarily their farm system. I mean, Nate Jones and Jose Quintana and Hector Santiago. I like Hector Santiago.
Yeah.
Addison Reed. But I still think there's a lot of potential for those guys to not perform as well as they did last year.
So in other words, Mets, White Sox, World Series is what we're saying.
That's right. That's what we're saying. It's a Robbie Alomar end of career spectacular between the White Sox and the Mets. But yeah, I mean, and then I guess the other collapse potential. Is there another team you think has collapse potential in either league?
That's not talked about widely.
Yeah. The Mets, I think, I guess, actually were your pick. Were they
yeah,
here?
Just because of the pitching situation.
I picked them even lower than the Marlins.
I think their offense is going to be okay, but the pitching.
Well, Matt is shaking his head no. So that's what that moment of silence
was. I love Nice and Harvey, but maybe not 200 innings of them.
That's, I think, their big challenge is how long can they keep Zach Wheeler in AAA, and how can they stretch out Matt Harvey? Because they need, it's almost for their sake of their team not being a joke or a laugh, because it's not a great outfield either. I mean, it's pretty bad.
That's
outfield.
Putting it lightly.
It's Duda, Baxter, Neuenheis. Am I leaving someone out?
I think you're looking at a center field platoon of Valdespin and Calgill.
Wow.
I kind of like Valdespin in a reserve type
platoon type role.
He's like a
less good Leury Garcia.
Yeah, he's got explosive tools, but right now the application is spotty.
And he's, what, 5 years older than Leury Garcia? So we know a little bit more about Valdespin. And the makeup has never been universally praised
with
Jordani Valdespin. So, yeah, it's a pretty ugly – it could get pretty ugly in New York, I think. And especially just the National League. I mean, well, obviously the schedules are different. We could talk about all that more in a whole preseason podcast.
I guess the Rockies could be a team that could bottom out.
That's a good one. And they stood out to me, Matt, for not really having – I mean, Nolan Arenado got sent down and basically lost the third base job to Chris Nelson, which makes sense. Chris Nelson played pretty decent at the end of last year. He's out of options. He was a first-round pick. You know, Arenado hasn't played above AA, so I get it. But they really don't have any rookies of any import
on
their big league roster.
Looking for a fantasy impact, I settled on Ryan Wheeler, just based on the fact that he's, you know, fives across the board and he's got AAA experience.
And at some point, Todd Helton will stop playing, so
right.
Maybe he's at first base. I know they have Colvin there, and they have the versatility of Pacheco, but it's an odd team with Reed Brignac looking like he's going to make the everyday team as the backup shortstop.
I forgot all about him.
Yeah, well, he's forgettable. I mean, he hit 150, it seems like. I mean, he's fairly forgettable.
He's going to replace Jonathan Herrera with style.
And that's it. I mean, it is not really a lot of there with this. Not a lot of interesting things going on with the Rockies' big league roster. I'm more fascinated by their
minor leagues. If they get Ubaldo Jimenez, they're that much closer to reuniting the 07 rotation. They just signed Aaron Cook. They have Jeff Francis.
Where's Sean Chacon? Can they bring Sean Chacon back and go back to 05?
Frank the Morales?
He might be available.
Who's that guy? The right-hander from Florida? Josh Fogg?
Oh, yeah.
Get Josh Fogg back?
Nice pull. Josh Fogg. I forgot he was a Rocky.
He pitched that crucial wild-card play-in game for them, I believe, in 07.
So this is what Walt Weiss is going to make his Major League debut with as a Major League manager. It's these guys. I like Juan Nicasio. I like Julius Cicin. They do get Jorge De La Rosa back. But the fact that I just think it's unusual for a team that's in a rebuilding stage. It's not, I don't think, a contender. I don't think anyone thinks it's a contender. To have so few rookies ready to help their team. But I think that's a little bit of a comment on their big league roster and a little bit of a comment on the way they drafted those couple of years. 06 to 08, they really had some real struggles in terms of how those draft guys turned out for them.
And they actually won the Ian Stewart, Casey Weathers trade, it looks like.
They did, which is, yeah. We won, you know.
We got DJ LeMahieu.
And Tyler Colvin.
They won handily.
I think they definitely won handily, so... Matt, great podcast. I didn't know we were going to talk that long, but more than an hour.
Well,
on
the Rockies come up. It's hard to shut me up.
That's what it is. And we didn't even do it all on Zach Wheeler. So we thank our listeners for the questions, great questions. As always, you can tweet at us at MattEddieBA and at JohnManuelBA, or you can email us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. And we'll be back next week with another professional podcast as well as our Monday college podcast. So for Matt, I'm John. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.